Today is Thursday, June 4th. What to know today about the new charges now filed against all four officers involved in George Floyd's death, and why protests continue around the world. Also, what a top military leader is saying about President Trump's response to the civil unrest. Plus, SpaceX makes a change to its satellites. The NBA has a new plan for its season involving Disney World. And Sesame Street's message to the kids this week. Then hang out after the news for Thing to Know Thursday's bonus interview. We're getting an expert's take on the protests and how to see real progress. Welcome, welcome to The Newsworthy. All the day's news in less than 10 minutes. Fast, fair, fun, and on the go. I'm Erica Mandy. Thanks so much for being here. You ready? Let's do this. There are now new charges against the former police officers involved in George Floyd's death. First, the Minnesota Attorney General upgraded charges against the fired officer who kneeled on Floyd's neck for nearly 9 minutes. Derek Chauvin is charged with second-degree murder now, which is more severe than his previous charge of third-degree murder. It means prosecutors will have to prove he intended to kill George Floyd, and Attorney General Keith Ellison says he has enough evidence to do that. It also means Chauvin faces up to 50 years in prison instead of 35. Also, Ellison charged the three other former officers who were there with aiding and abetting murder. They were all arrested and taken to jail. Soon after, the site of the brutal arrest was filled with music and dancing. People felt relief and celebrated that all four officers have now been charged. Still, the attorney general is asking for patience. He said the cases against the former officers will likely take many months to see all the way through. Meanwhile, George Floyd's family is working with activists on several memorial services. The first one will be held this afternoon in Minneapolis. Civil rights activist Al Sharpton will deliver Floyd's eulogy. A second will take place Saturday in North Carolina, where Floyd was born. And next week, his funeral will be in Houston, Texas, where Floyd lived the majority of his life. Champion boxer Floyd Mayweather has already agreed to pay for the funeral. Well, despite the new charges against the former Minneapolis officers, protests are not letting up. The New York Times spoke with several protesters around the country who all basically said, it's great news, but it's not nearly enough. So far this week, USA Today says there have been protests in at least 430 cities and towns and in all 50 states. Rallies have also been growing around the world. In London, thousands of people came together to protest racial injustice. Several of them were holding banners with George Floyd's face on them, and many chanted his final words, I can't breathe. Earlier this week, about 20,000 people gathered in Paris, also inspired by the death of George Floyd. And other protests were held in Copenhagen, Milan, Berlin, and even as far away as New Zealand. Back in the U.S., dozens of American cities remained under curfews last night, but a lot of them pushed the curfew times to later hours, since protests were mostly peaceful the last couple of days. There have been very few reports of widespread violence, vandalism, or looting. Washington, D.C.'s police chief said it seemed large groups of protesters have been doing some self-policing, encouraging each other to keep things civil. And it looks like that's working pretty well. Still, we should note, Washington, D.C. has also seen a huge show of force. Military police and law enforcement officers from several federal agencies were patrolling the city yesterday. A senior defense official told the AP at least 2,200 guard members were on the streets. At the same time, an FBI plane, Army surveillance plane, and police helicopter were watching protesters from the air. Remember, President Trump has been talking about, as he words it, dominating the streets all week. So he's followed through on that promise. But it seems like not everyone at the Pentagon is happy about that. Defense Secretary Mark Esper told reporters he does not want to use military forces for law enforcement. He said active duty troops should only be used in the most urgent and dire of situations. And he said that's not what's happening right now. The Pentagon was reportedly going to send active duty soldiers home from D.C. today. But then Esper went to a meeting at the White House, and by the end of it, the decision was reversed. Now the Army Secretary says 1,300 Army troops will stay in the capital city for at least another 24 hours. CNN reports Esper is now on some shaky ground. President Trump's inner circle did not like seeing the Defense Secretary publicly opposing his boss. The White House press secretary would not really comment about this and just said, as of right now, he's still the Defense Secretary. That being said, it's clear President Trump is more furious with a previous defense secretary. We're talking about retired Marine General Jim Mattis. He resigned over policy differences 2 years ago. The Atlantic published a statement from Mattis yesterday. He wrote, quote, Donald Trump is the first president in my lifetime who does not try to unite the American people. And instead, he tries to divide us. The president reacted on Twitter by calling Mattis, quote, the world's most overrated general. Every living former U.S. president has expressed sadness over the death of George Floyd and support for the people protesting injustice. The first Black American president was also the first to comment publicly. Barack Obama issued a statement Friday. Then, at a virtual town hall yesterday, he spoke directly to young Black people, telling them, quote, "Feel hopeful even as you may feel angry." And he said he sees change coming. The oldest living president also released a statement yesterday. Jimmy Carter wrote, "Our hearts are with the victims' families and all who feel hopeless in the face of pervasive racial discrimination and outright cruelty." His statement came on the heels of President George W. Bush, who said, quote, "It is time for America to examine our tragic failures, and as we do, we will also see some of our redeeming strengths." Over the weekend, we got a dose of harsh reality from former President Bill Clinton. He said, quote, "No one deserves to die the way George Floyd did. And the truth is, if you're white in America, the chances are you won't." We posted links to their full statements in today's show notes. Well, as of 12:01 this morning, Nevada casinos have been given the green light to reopen. Visitors can expect a new normal, though. Casinos are introducing temperature checks, hand-washing stations, and plexiglass dividers at the casino tables. NPR reports casinos are also capping capacity at 50%, so half the floor tables will be roped off and every other slot machine will be out of service. The hope is reopening does not trigger a spike in new infections, especially since it seems things are so far improving across the country. Right now, Axios reports 22 states are seeing a drop in hospitalizations. Only 5 have reported an increase. We have much more news ahead, but first, a quick break to thank our sponsor this week. Our routines have changed these days, and it's meant new opportunities for learning. Yet with thousands of options available, finding the best way to learn can be a bit overwhelming. Well, one great option is an app called Blinkist. It's unique. Blinkist gives you the best key takeaways, the need-to-know information from over 3,000 nonfiction bestsellers in over 27 categories. Blinkist condenses them down into blinks, which you can read or listen to in just 15 minutes. I love it for when I want to quickly read up on a news-related topic with blinks such as the future home in the 5G area, or for when I want a dose of motivation about business or leadership with blinks like The Virgin Way by Richard Branson. In fact, right now, Blinkist has a special offer for our audience. Go to Blinkist.com/news to start your free 7-day trial and get 25% off a Blinkist premium membership and up to 65% off their new option of full audiobooks, which are yours to keep forever, by the way. That's Blinkist, spelled B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T, Blinkist.com/news to get 25% off a premium membership and a 7-day free trial. Now, back to the news. Today, the NBA is expected to get the go-ahead to resume its season. The league's Board of Governors is reportedly ready to sign off on teams playing all remaining games, but they won't happen at the regular arenas. Instead, it'll be at Walt Disney World near Orlando. The theme park has a big sports complex that could host practices and games. It'll mean teams will not have to travel from city to city. If the plan is finalized today, here's what you can expect. ESPN reports 22 teams who have a shot at the playoffs would each play 8 games. Then it would be time for playoffs. Right now, the target restart date is July 31st. Still, fans would not be allowed in the stands, just teams and essential personnel only. The new plan will likely get the stamp of approval this afternoon. Snapchat is the latest tech company to take on President Trump. CNN reports the social network is no longer going to promote his account. The platform says it will no longer, quote, amplify voices who incite racial violence and injustice. This means you'll no longer see Trump on Snapchat's Discover feature, which spotlights celebrities and news organizations. Remember, the president is already in a feud with Twitter, which put warning and fact-check labels on some of Trump's tweets last week. The president says social media companies are trying to suppress conservative voices and rig the 2020 election. He signed an executive order to give the government more power over these companies, though it's now been challenged in court. SpaceX just launched its second rocket within 1 week. Last night's did not carry humans into space, though, like the historic flight on Saturday. Instead, The Verge reports it took a batch of 60 satellites into orbit. SpaceX plans to eventually have 12,000 of these satellites in space that will provide internet service to more areas on Earth. Astronomers are pushing back, though. They say all those satellites will pollute the night sky. So SpaceX is getting creative. One of the satellites it sent up yesterday had a visor or sunshade attached to it. The company wants to see if that prevents it from reflecting light so it's not as visible. TBD if it works. Sesame Street and CNN are teaming up to help families talk to children about race, turmoil, and acceptance. CNN's Van Jones and Erica Hill are leading an hour-long town hall with the help of some favorite Sesame Street characters like Big Bird and Elmo. They'll address topics like racism and recent protests. The special will also focus on reminding kids to embrace diversity and be more empathetic and understanding with each other. It's called Coming Together, Standing Up to Racism. It's this Saturday at 10 a.m. Eastern on CNN and will also stream on their website. No cable login required. All right, that's it for our main 10 minutes of news today, but now it's time for Thing to Know Thursday, where a different expert explains a different thing to know only on Thursdays after the news. And this week, we're talking about the core reason behind the protests right now, the data we do and don't have about police brutality, and what specific actions could really lead to more progress. My guest today is Dr. Rashawn Ray. He's a sociologist with the Brookings Institution and the University of Maryland. He's been studying this topic for years and has led trainings for companies, police departments, and the military. So here's our conversation. Dr. Rashawn Ray, thank you so much for coming on The Newsworthy.
Thank you for having me on the show. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, so I would actually love to start with your take on the core reason for these protests we're seeing right now and how you're feeling about it.
I think it's one specific statistic that I highlighted in a recent article that I wrote at Brookings, which is bad apples come from rotten trees in policing. And we've never fully dealt with the rotten tree. The rotten tree in policing, similar to the United States, is the way that structural racism is imbued in our social institutions and our social interactions. And I think it's one specific statistic that I highlight. There are several, but there's one in particular that I think highlights this moment. And it's the fact that Black Americans are 3.5 times more likely than white Americans to be killed by police when they're not attacking or have a weapon. That is what happened to George Floyd. That is part of a continuum of police violence that oftentimes starts with Christian Cooper in Central Park with Amy Cooper, where she alleged that he was threatening her, kind of highlighting this damsel in distress type of racial trope that we know historically has resonated throughout our country. Has Ahmaud Arbery in the middle being chased and literally hunted by two vehicles on each end, and then ending up with George Floyd being underneath the knee of a police officer as he took his last breath and yelled out for his mother.
And speaking of all three of those instances happening back to back to back recently, on top of the impact from COVID-19 that we're all dealing with and the way that it's disproportionately impacting people of color, do you think all of that together is why this is happening now?
I definitely think that's why this is happening now. So one of the things that I've been saying is that we are dealing with two pandemics. We're dealing with COVID-19 and we're dealing with racism. Hopefully, similar to previous pandemics and virus outbreaks, we can deal with COVID-19, that eventually we'll get to a point where there is a vaccine, where we get healthcare access and quality up to speed to get people vaccinated and be safe from this virus. However, when it comes to racism, we have never fully dealt with that. And people have to recognize that racism is America's original sin. The United States was founded on unequal ground, with one group of people being enslaved. And I know a lot of people say, oh, well, slavery was so long ago. But was it, though? Like, I actually don't think it is. We have 1619 through 1865, formalized, legalized, sanctioned, and state-run enslavement. From 1865 until 1964-65, we had legalized Jim Crow segregation. We could take a map from 1920 and put it on top of 2020. And what we'll see is that those maps, when we look at it by race and social class, and I've done this a lot in my research, you see that those maps by race and class almost look identical to one another. Because even though redlining was outlawed decades ago, de facto redlining continues. Redlining is where you literally prevent one group of people in one particular geographic location from being able to get proper investment in banks, from being able to get proper education for schooling in terms of funding, preventing them from getting access to grocery stores. And we see that playing out in those structural conditions, as I've also written in some pieces at Brookings on COVID, is that those structural conditions manifest in pre-existing health conditions that really spill over onto the bodies of Black people. We've had some sort of symbiotic form of freedom, just 55 years. But then we enter the form of mass incarceration, where if for Black men, if they're in their 30s, 10% of Black men in their 30s can expect to spend some time in prison. And people always say, well, you know, if they did the crime, they did the time. I agree with that. Part of the problem, however, is that at times when white people do the crime, they don't do the time in the same way Black people do. And you put all this together and it collides on people seeing a dead body on the street as George Floyd yelled out for his mama, who died literally 2 years before he did, almost on the same exact day.
And because of George Floyd's death and all of the things that you just mentioned, we're now seeing these protests. But really, we've been hearing about the Black Lives Matter movement since 2013. So speaking even just within more recent years, do you think anything has changed?
That's a great point. I mean, obviously, in 2012, when Trayvon Martin was murdered by George Zimmerman and the Black Lives Matter movement popped up immediately after the non-guilty verdict, and there were three black queer women who said, black people's lives don't matter, our lives don't matter. And then one came in affirming and said, but our lives do matter, black lives do matter. That's how it came about, from a simple Facebook post to turn into a global movement. And I do think that there have been progress, and I'll highlight some of these for people. And I've published on this in academic journals, looking at the rise of the Black Lives Movement, the way that they use social media, the way that they use technology. I think we see that tenet today. Most of us wouldn't even know about Ahmaud Arbery, Christian Cooper, or George Floyd without camera phones. So technology has been formally integrated. Part of what came out of that for policing is the advent of body-worn cameras, which is commonplace now. We also had implicit bias trainings, which popped up, which I've worked on both of those. I work with dozens of police departments around the country. I've worked with the Department of Homeland Security. I've worked with the military. I also come from a law enforcement family. I have six police officers in my family. My great uncle was the first black chief of police in my hometown. My grandfather served 21 years in the military, Purple Heart and Bronze Star, with two wars. So that is my legacy doing this work as a researcher and a scholar and a policy analyst. And what people have to realize is the progress we made with implicit bias trainings and body-worn cameras was because people were actually protesting in the streets. Almost immediately after seeing that video, the mayor and the police chief got together in Minneapolis and they fired those four officers. Charges have also been brought forth for those officers. With Christian Cooper and Amy Cooper, Amy Cooper lost her job. She lost her dog due to animal cruelty. With Ahmaud Arbery, once the video came out, and once the state got involved and the federal level got involved, then what we've seen is three people have been charged with murder. And hopefully that will come to fruition in a guilty verdict. So I think there's a series of silver lining, and I think more of that is going to come over the next several months.
Yeah. Do you think these protests will be even cause even more change than we've seen in the past? Could this be a tipping point?
Yeah, I do think that this is a tipping point. And I think it's going to be a couple of ways in which is actually a few ways in which it's going to happen. And there are mayors now across the country trying to figure it out. And I think this is something very important for people to recognize. One thing that I learned studying policing, police departments, they are oftentimes implementing mandated policy that comes from the state and federal level. So for people who are trying to think of what they can do, they should email, write, call their state representatives. They should look up in their state the judicial committees on the representative side and the Senate side at the state level. And those are the people who you email, call, and write. And you tell them you want to see change. And I think there are three policy changes that would change a lot about what's happening in policing. First, at the federal level, and people can also scale this up federally with their senators and their representatives. They should do that as well. But Senator Cory Booker has been pushing for several years for a national database on police killings. One of the things that people don't realize is that we know how many people are killed by jellyfish every year. The CDC collects that, but we do not collect information on how many people are killed by the police. While a lot of people say it's purposeful, and I think that it is in some ways, most police departments are small. They simply do not have the capacity to do the type of data collection and analysis that's required, nor do they have the skill set. This is why federal funding must be allocated to help them with that process. Second thing, we need to ensure that officers who engage in police misconduct and are terminated can never work again in law enforcement. Why is that important? Well, Officer Chauvin, who had his knee on Gerald Floyd's neck, had nearly 20 police misconduct allegations. And part of this is thinking through the fact that if he had have been charged, or if the police department had taken swift action, then George Floyd might still be alive, but he's not the only one. Third thing quickly is we need to make a shift from taxpayer dollars to police department insurances when it comes to civilian payouts for police misconduct. What does that mean? Eventually, George Floyd's family is going to get a large civil payout. And when they get that large civil payout, those monies are going to come from taxpayer money. So George Floyd's family is going to be repaid with some of the same tax money that they've paid into the city for the death and dehumanization of one of their loved ones. In the city of Chicago, they spent over $600 million over the past two decades on police misconduct allegations and civil suits. Imagine if that money could go toward improving schools. Imagine if that money could go toward improving work infrastructure. You know what would happen? Particularly as people like to highlight crime on the south side of Chicago. Well, crime would decrease because crime is highly correlated with education and work. You give people equitable education, you give them work opportunities, and all of a sudden we see a decrease in crime.
I appreciate those specific ideas for both the system at large and for the individual. One question that does often get brought up that I want to at least address here is about the peaceful protesting versus setting fires and destroying businesses and some of that that we've seen. What's your take on that and the potential impact of both?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I don't think anyone really ever wants to see destruction of property, looting, rioting, damage. I mean, I think peaceful protest is always the way and the way to for people to legally express their First Amendment right. When other things start happening, it becomes criminal. When we think about what's happening in the streets, I think it's a couple of things. First is MLK always said that riots are the language of the unheard. And when people kneel peacefully, like several years ago when Colin Kaepernick was kneeling peacefully, he wasn't saying anything. He was just kneeling, trying to raise awareness about police brutality. And he got jumped on. He lost his job. He lost all sorts of things that he had worked pretty much his whole life for. And it's one thing I know is that when people try to do something silently and people don't listen, well, you know what they do? They do it louder. And I think what is highlighted by is a teenager in Baltimore who I remember 5 years ago, who they were asking her, why are you all tearing this stuff up? And she essentially said, you know, you all weren't paying attention to us until we started doing something to a CVS store. And she said, it takes for us to tear something up for you all to listen to us. And doesn't make that right. But you know what it makes it? It makes it reality. Like, that is reality. The other thing people have to realize is that protesters, particularly who are part of organizations, are oftentimes different people from looters and rioters. And it's important for us to make those distinctions, that some of the people who are going to be sitting at tables making decisions are not the looters and rioters.
And you can read more about this topic and our guest in today's episode notes. And be sure to share if you found this episode helpful. Thank you so much for listening. The Newsworthy is here for you by 4 a.m. every weekday. We'll be back tomorrow with your news roundup for Friday and the weekend. Until then, have a great day.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.